I want a property that if our strategy doesn't work, if rents don't go up, even if rents come down, the property will still cash flow. Maybe not. Maybe we're not even giving our investors a very good return, but we're not in danger of giving them nothing, or we're certainly not in danger of losing the property. When you go in and it's a property that can cash flow, it gives you a lot of security. And then it's like, hey, if we can work out this plan, it's going to be really good.
Welcome to Passive Income Unlocked, where we unlock the doors to intelligent, hands-off real estate investing. We talk to experts in the space about what they do, how they do it, and most importantly, why they do it. My passion is careful, intelligent investing and closing the investing gap one investor at a time. While money doesn't buy happiness, passive income does have the potential to buy back your time. What would you choose to do with your time if you had enough passive income to live your best life? How would you like to spend your days? What kind of impact would you like to make? I'm here to tell you, dream big. There's no ceiling. It's all possible if you take consistent action towards your goals. It's been said that success is 80% mindset and 20% strategy. So we discuss both. Ready to gain knowledge and take action? Let's dive in. Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the show. Today, I'm very excited to introduce our guest for the day, Lee Yoder. Lee, thank you so much for coming on the show.
It's a pleasure to be on. Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, really excited to dive into your story. Everybody, Lee was a practicing physical therapist when he realized his true passion was building his own business and investing in real estate. He is now a syndicator of apartment buildings, and I want to hear more about what you're up to now, Lee. Why don't you start us off by sharing what it was that kind of helped you understand that you wanted to switch from being a physical therapist to being in real estate?
Yeah, sure. It's a great question. So when I decided I wanted to switch, I actually wasn't doing any physical therapy, but that was part of kind of my transition. So I came on with a startup company as a physical therapist doing home health physical therapy for them. That was okay, but it wasn't something I was passionate about. You know, when you got to do your work every day, 5 days a week, you know, you want to be something that you're passionate about, something you're fulfilled. Well, this company asked me to come into the office and start, and I was the clinical director. So I was doing more like office work, managing people, and really helped building this division for this startup. And I really enjoyed that. So I was doing no physical therapy for them, more like director of operations type stuff. Really enjoying that work now. So now I'm fulfilled with my work, but the work-life balance wasn't very good. So I was just, you know, at work too much, in my opinion. My wife and I just felt like it's not like the life that God called us to. You know, we were starting our family at the time. So two young kids at home. She was, you know, ready for me to get home in the evenings. She was staying home with the kids. So, I wanted to be home. I wanted to be home for dinner. And
of course,
you know, it was one of those things, like I really enjoyed my work and I enjoyed it so much, like I could kind of get consumed by it. So we were kind of looking for something else. And there were a couple other things like within the company, just that you run into when you're climbing the corporate ladder where you feel like, oh, maybe, you know, we're going to be here. And then the goalpost gets moved a little bit. It was a great company, great leadership and all that. But just felt like maybe it wasn't for us, wasn't what we were looking for. So then somebody turned me on to real estate. Somebody handed me a book. It wasn't Rich Dad, Poor Dad, but I eventually, you know, got to Rich Dad, Poor Dad and started having that mindset change. But like I said, I was kind of already looking for something else because I was looking, I didn't want to go back and just do home health physical therapy because that was great for my family. Very flexible. We made enough money off of it, you know, not going to get rich, but plenty of money for us. Very flexible. So plenty of time at home. Yeah. It wasn't stressful. So I was, you know, able to be a good husband, a good father, but I just couldn't do that, you know, long-term because I didn't enjoy the work. You know, it wasn't fulfilling and you can't do that forever. You know, I did it for, you know, a couple of years here and there. But it wasn't long-term, but also I didn't want to necessarily be in a job that was really fulfilling and challenging and all those things you want in work, but was also kind of too consuming where I couldn't be the husband and the father and the Christ follower that I wanted to be. So when I saw real estate, I felt like, hopefully, I think this could be the best of both worlds where I can build something and become an investor and buy properties and, you know, enjoy this work, but also have the flexibility and some of the time freedom to also be, you know, a good Christian, a good husband, a good father. Those things there are more important to me, but you got to do the work. So kind of got that bug and realized maybe I wanted to leave the corporate world, go back to home health and try to get into real estate.
I see. Okay. So just so I understand, do you think that what was a good mix about real estate was that you could operate at kind of like a higher level in the business. Is that kind of what you find fulfilling about real estate?
Yeah, I guess, you know, real estate really spoke to me. My dad's in construction. I did some construction myself and the numbers, I'm really into numbers. So I just thought I'd really enjoy real estate. I think it was more just entrepreneurship, honestly, in general, just that, hey, maybe if I start my own thing, like, I think that'll be really exciting and challenging and fulfilling, but because I'm my own boss, I can control it a little bit better.
For sure. Yes. I mean, I completely relate and just wanted to kind of get at the root of that. When did you make that switch or start pursuing real estate?
I left that company, left my corporate job toward the end of 2016. I took probably like a 20 to 30% pay cut to go back to home health physical therapy. I did that for a whole year before I did anything in real estate. And by the fall of 2017, then we purchased a house to flip. So we started with flipping. But yeah, left in at the end of 2016.
For sure. And I mean, I think that's a common place to start flipping. It's certainly where I started. I did my first real estate deal as a flip before I really knew anything about purchasing apartments or commercial real estate. And, you know, I'd love to just hear what that first book was. I know it wasn't Rich Dad, Poor Dad, but what was it?
You know, it was kind of a random book. It was called The 16% Solution, I think. And it was basically buying notes, buying other debt, you know, like buying a mortgage that the bank doesn't want or a failing mortgage or something and buying that and just making the, you know, getting the interest off of it and how you can play that game. And it just started to make me open my eyes like, wow, okay, there's this whole other world. There's all these different things you can do in real estate. It's not just like, I mean, I knew you could buy a house and flip it. That's about all I knew that you could do in real estate other than owning your own home.
Yeah.
You know, that people like you and I could do, right?
Yeah.
To me, sure, I knew somebody owned apartments, but I never thought it could be a person, you know, that'd be a giant company or something like that.
Okay. So what did you end up doing after that first flip? Just can you help us kind of understand your trajectory?
Yeah. You know, yeah, I'll try to go through it real quick. So we flipped the house at the end of 2017. And honestly, that was just like another job.
Was that in Ohio, like near where you live?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Southwest Ohio is in our home, in the town that we live in.
Okay.
So we kept it local. Yep. And I did a ton of work myself. I kind of tried to keep track so I would know, like, you know, hey, was this worth it or whatever? I put in over 500 hours myself. Like I said, I was working a full-time job at the time, but not a real demanding job. But toward the end, when we were really trying to get this flip done, to get it on the market at the right time, it was like I was back at the corporate job. So my wife was like, this isn't, you know, the bag of goods that you sold me, you know, on real estate. And I'm like, yeah, I know it's not. And this is why so many people on the podcast I listen to say that flipping is not investing because, you know, you're just still trading your time for money. And that was definitely my experience. Other people, you know, can really get it going and have a good experience with it. But for me, it was like, you know, just trading my time for money. And I was doing a full-time job. So I knew that's not what I wanted to do. So next we bought a duplex in the fall of 2018. You know, the next year we're like doing something each year. We bought a duplex. Basically, that was a flip as well, but we rented it for a little bit, you know, to some residents and got to see and managed it ourselves. It was just two units and they were great residents. They were easy to manage, but I didn't enjoy the management of it. I didn't enjoy being a landlord, but I did enjoy seeing that what our residents paid us each month was more than all of our expenses, right? So I got to start seeing like, okay, this is investing because once the flip was over, that's when we just started making money every single month. And I could tell like, as long as we own this, we're going to make money every single month.
Yeah.
You know, we might have some vacancy, but we'll get something back in there and we've got some reserves to cover that, stuff like that. So, and it was just a much better experience. So my wife and I both were like, okay, this is more what we want to do, you know, is have rentals. So the next year I started getting more and more into multifamily. The next year I actually got a 16 unit.
Nice.
And then soon after that, you know, some people talk about the law of the first deal. I definitely experienced that because the day that we were closing on our 16 unit, I put an 8 unit under contract or got an offer accepted on an 8 unit. And then, you know, just like a month or a month and a half later, got a 10 unit. So we bought 34 units over three properties at the end of 2019. And that was really this past year that we started syndicating.
This show is sponsored by Lux Capital Investment Group. Lux Capital provides pre-vetted, highly favorable investment opportunities on a risk-adjusted basis. Our opportunities are diversified across asset classes, geographies, and operators. We are nothing short of rigorous in our approach to evaluating investments, We focus on downside protection, conservative underwriting, recession-resistant asset classes, and forging strong relationships with operating partners and investors. If you want to be an intelligent, hands-off investor and gain access to the types of deals that I like to invest in personally, make sure to go to lux-cap.com, L-U-X-E-C-A-P.com, and sign up for our newsletter. Okay, got it. So you were able to fund those acquisitions, those original apartment acquisitions, just to yourself?
No. We did use a home equity line of credit on the first two, on just the flip and the duplex, our savings and a home equity line of credit. But then after that, we got into the small multis. We did joint ventures. So okay. Like just bringing in either one or two money partners on each of those.
Okay, great. And how did you meet those money partners?
Family and friends.
Okay.
Close friends and family. Yep.
Yeah. And were you at the time also kind of participating in real estate groups, networking? I mean, most people do. Just curious, like how involved you were.
Yes. Soon after I got the duplex, which was the fall of 2018, I joined the local RIA here in Cincinnati, a RIA. And I've got a lot of good out of that RIA, but mostly it was, they have different focus groups. And there was a guy leading an apartment investing focus group. Mm-hmm. And that guy taught me how to underwrite. I mean, he had taken some of the courses and I would have taken one of those. I'm not against coaching or the coaching programs. We can meet a lot of people, but because that one was so good, I just never did join any of those. Because he was teaching us how to underwrite. I actually gave him 10% of my first 16 unit because he taught me so much. And I was like, hey, how do I do an LOI? Okay, use this LOI. Okay, what do you think of this contract? So he was helping me so much in it. So I'm like, I'm going to give you 10%. I want you to stay in on this with me. And that's kind of how I paid for my coaching. I didn't have to do that, but he definitely deserved it. So yeah, that it was the local RIA that really taught me.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. Well. And okay, so then you started syndicating. So where were those 16, the 16-plex and the 18-plex, was that near your Dayton or was that in Cincinnati or in Dayton?
Closer to Dayton. Actually, none of them were really in Dayton, but they were all around Dayton. So it was a Dayton property management company that managed them. And all within a half an hour drive for me.
Yeah. Okay. Very cool. And how did you find these properties? Were they off market? Were you using a broker? I think these little details, there's so much to making a deal happen, actually, sure. And love to hear the details.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's so important because it is so hard to get started, right? It's the hardest part is to get your first one when you're trying to get in a multifamily. I found a 16 unit on LoopNet.
Nice.
when people say where deals go to die. And I knew that. And I thought, well, that's probably where I'm going to have to find one then because, right? They say like, oh, deals only end up on LoopNet if nobody else wants it. Okay. Well, I don't have anything. So that's probably the one I'm going to get. That's how I got started. So I got the 16 unit on LoopNet. The 8 unit was on the residential MLS. So that's another place to look to kind of get started because it was not priced like a commercial property should be priced. It wasn't priced based on NOI. It was priced based on the area and just kind of comps, but not even, I don't know, there's not many 8 units, there's just not that many that sell every, few months. So there's not that many comps. So they just had it priced wrong. So I offered full price. Day one. This was a little bit different time. I mean, I thought things were hot in 2018 when I got these, but obviously, it's way hotter now. So, on that 16 unit I offered, they only wanted 450. They're small units, they wanted 440 and I got it for 350. So I just offered them $90,000 under their asking price and they countered and I said, no, that's my price. And they stuck with it. So it wasn't a good deal because it was run down, needed a lot of work, but also because it was priced wrong. So I just, asked for the price that made sense. And then my third one was on LoopNet as well.
Okay, cool.
Kind of same story. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's really interesting, because there is this idea that you shouldn't go to LoopNet, but I mean, it's worth checking, right? It's worth checking and seeing because if you are maybe not as competitive of a buyer or need to just get your foot in the door, why not, use LoopNet? So.
And it's a great place to practice, I would say.
Yeah.
Because even if, there's deals there, most of those brokers are like, this is a crap deal. So do you want the T12? But you've never bought anything, but I'll give it to you. So, you can get the information, start underwriting and practicing. It's a great way to practice.
Totally. For sure. Great. Well, how was that working with your home healthcare work? Like, were you like 50-50 and how did you balance kind of like bringing in money with that and then starting this new business?
Yeah, good question. Like I said, I was able to fund the deals with some family and friends, so I didn't have to come out a lot out of pocket. So, and we had some savings and we could have done we could have done some of it ourselves, but other people wanted to get in. So I was like, well, let's do that. So we got to keep our savings and had some cushion, but my job was still full time. you know, I honestly, I wasn't even working 40 hours a week though. So I did have some extra, I was probably more like 30 hours most weeks. So I could put 10, 15, 20 into the real estate stuff. And I was doing that because I still had it. I still use a third-party manager. Like I told you, for my first duplex, I knew I didn't want to manage. So I still use third-party management, but I was very involved because these were some heavy lifts. So I kind of acted like the GC and I was, you know, the one out there with the contractors and even finding them and hiring them sometimes and things like that. So it worked pretty well. I got busy sometimes, but honestly, I was able to really control it. And, you know, the wife and kids were happy with it and brought them to the property sometimes too. So I was really enjoying it. It was good.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's something we haven't even touched on at all yet is, you know, what your kind of business plan you executed at these properties. You said it was a heavy lift.
Sure. The 16 unit was an old school building. It had already been converted, so I didn't have to do any converting. But it was just really rough. The hallways were gross. So we ripped out all the carpet, did all new LVP and new lighting in the hallways. That was most of the common area, but it made a big difference. And then we rehabbed maybe 7 of the 16 units and just started raising rent and making people not smoke in the building and things like that. And just really improved the value there. The 8 unit, we didn't have to do too much to. The previous owner had really done a good job. He just was not keeping up with market rents. So yeah. There it was just running it like a business, having professional management and getting rents up to market. And we did have quite a few people move out, but we didn't really have to do much, but we could still get rent up $100. So there it was just kind of a management play. In the 8 unit, we spent, I mean, just on 8 units, we spent over $100,000. A lot of exterior. We did new siding. The buildings were mostly brick, but wherever there was siding, we did new siding, new gutters and some fascia and things like that. And then we rehabbed, I think, 7 of the 10 units. So heavy lift there with the units as well. And same thing, getting the rents way up and running it more like a business and making people pay and things like that.
Yeah, for sure. You know, in terms of replacing your income, or have you stopped doing home health care at this point?
Yes.
Okay.
Yep. Just a little over a year ago, I stopped it, December 2020.
Okay. Congratulations.
Thank you.
And what was your kind of benchmark? Like, how did you decide you had kind of enough coming in?
Yeah. So that's a good question. So, you know, the way I sold it to my wife is the normal, like, well, we're going to get enough rentals that the income, the monthly income that we receive from the rentals will replace my income. That's what, you know, everybody knows that's what you're supposed to do. Well, it was just taking too long. I want to get into it. So I don't mind sharing with you. And this is not bragging at all. But you know, those 34 units, I would say that was like if we would have got them all stabilized, which we didn't because we started selling them off, and that's getting jumping ahead to how we did it. But if I would have kept all of those, all 34 units, the three which you know just joint ventures, probably I would have made like between $30,000 and $35,000 per year. And that was about half of what we felt like we needed, like our baseline. We've got a pretty low living expenses, things like that. So $65,000, $75,000, something like that. So we were about halfway there with those 34 units. So I could have tried to do that again and got another 34, very similar, you know, properties. Already prices were going way up. So I knew I wasn't going to get as good of a deals as I had gotten. But I didn't want to wait that long. It had already been, you know, a full year to get them and turn them around. And I didn't want to wait that long. So, you know, with having so much equity in these properties and the market, you know, doing what it did, we were like hitting our 3-year plan in a year, you know, or even maybe our 5-year plan in a year. So we actually sold all 3 of those. And the way I looked at that was, you know, okay, we could make, these aren't my actual numbers, but let's just say they are. If we could make 30 a year, that's great. We're halfway there. What if we could sell all of them and make 300? Well, that's basically taking 10 years of cash flow and giving it to ourselves. Now you're also paying down debt. So there's plenty of other benefits, but also it was like, okay, if we need 60 a year to live, well, what if we could sell and make 180? Well, then that's 3 years of living expenses, you know? So now I've got 3 years to go make it happen.
Yeah.
Yes. We'll have to live off our savings. That's not comfortable. It's not ideal, but now I can be full-time. What could I do full-time? If I could get 34 units and do all this on the side while working full time, what could I do full time? So that was kind of our strategy.
For sure.
It's not ideal. I think it's better if you can replace your income, and it's always better to hold on to stuff. But we sold, we had a big enough cushion where I could go full time, and I had a few years of a cushion to really get this thing going. So that's what we're working on now.
For sure. I mean, I don't think there's necessarily one right way or, you know, to do things. Like, yes, eventually you want to have a passive income portfolio, but the means to get there, you know, might not be the straight and narrow path, right? Like, cause also your time is so valuable, and what can you do with your time if you can buy that back?
Exactly.
And so exiting properties earlier on to give yourself runway seems like a perfectly reasonable strategy to me. So
thank you. Yeah, it's working out so far. I think it can be a strategy.
Yeah, for sure. So what kinds of deals are you looking for these days?
Yeah, so we just bumped it up a level starting this year in February or 2021. We're in the next year already. In 2021, in February, we bought a 45-unit property. Now, that was actually a 29-unit and 2-8 units that sold together. So, you know, kind of a nice little step up. It's still the size properties that we were used to, but we got 45 units in February. And then we got 47 units under one roof in June. So, yeah, just kind of taking that next step up, going from, you know, owning 34 between three properties to just, you know, buying more like 40 units at a time. And then just in December, we closed on a 96-unit property. So kind of that next step up, getting closer to 100 units now. So, I mean, that's kind of my story, right? Like fit the house, duplex, small multis, kind of mid-sized multis. Now we're getting toward the bigger multis with 100. And you know, maybe we'll just keep going up from there. I don't know.
Yeah, for sure.
But yeah, that's what we're doing now.
Very cool. And what do you like about the Dayton market? I know you live somewhere near Cincinnati, right? What is it about the Dayton market? That's where you're acquiring properties, right?
Yep. I live right between Dayton and Cincinnati. Dayton is just, it's affordable. I mean, I believe in multifamily long-term. I think any property you buy today, I think it's going to be worth more, and pretty sure it's going to be worth more in 5 years. I'm really confident it's going to be worth more in 10 years. But at the same time, I do feel like we could have a correction. So I'm just very adamant about buying for cash flow. And there's just not nearly as much competition in Dayton because it's not as good of a market, but people still live there. There's still plenty of renters. There's still a housing shortage like everywhere else. Prices have still gone up. Rent's gone up. But because there's not quite as much competition, you can still buy at a better cap rate. And when you do that, your property cash flows better early on.
Yeah.
Now, we always have a value add strategy. But to me, I want a property that if our strategy doesn't work, if rents don't go up, even if rents come down, the property will still cash flow, maybe we're not hitting our projection. Well, we certainly wouldn't hit our projections, but maybe we're not even giving our investors a very good return. But we're not in danger of giving them nothing, or we're certainly not in danger of losing the property. When you go in and it's a property that can cash flow, it gives you a lot of security. And then it's like, hey, if we can work out this plan, it's going to be really good. But even if it doesn't work out and the economy doesn't chug along like it has, you know, for so long, then we're going to be okay there too. When you start competing more and more on price, the higher you pay, the more, you know, the tougher that is, the higher your mortgage payment, you know, the higher all that stuff, the more debt you have on the properties. So when you pay, you know, a higher price, when you're more competitive on price, it's just a skinnier deal. It's a tighter deal. And we're just finding a little more margin, a little better cash flow in Dayton.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that there's a lot to be said for like when you're not competing in the most competitive markets in terms of buying properties, then you also have the chance to kind of position yourself as one of the more sophisticated operators, right?
Could be, sure.
And so you can potentially command a rent that's towards the top of the market if, you know, if you're providing something that other people aren't, right?
Yeah, yes.
And when you say the market's not as good as it is in Cincinnati and Dayton, what are you referring to, jobs or population or?
Yeah, that kind of stuff. Yeah, like Dayton doesn't really have population growth. It's steady. People aren't leaving. They're not fleeing by any means, but you don't see a lot. You don't see population growth. It's not a very big city. Someone was telling me for a while, Fannie and Freddie wouldn't lend in Dayton because it just didn't hit their metrics of like how big it was, but it's there now and they're lending. And Fannie and Freddie are doing more and more lending in smaller places anyway. But I've been told like institutional investors, a lot of their metrics, Dayton doesn't meet it. So the real big money doesn't come to Dayton and compete. Again, just some on size, like it's just not quite big enough of a city. It's maybe like 600,000 to 800,000 people. So, and that's the whole MSA, you know, whereas, you know, a lot of the cities will be 1 million to 2 million, things like that. It's not there, you know, more in the city, it's more like 500,000 or 600,000. But anyway, yeah, there's just not the population growth. There's jobs coming, but it's not going to hit a lot of the metrics that a lot of people look for.
Yeah, for sure. I love that because one thing I love about this is that it's so easy to get excited about the hot markets. And yet that's not necessarily the only way or place to make money, right? And you're a great example of that. What kinds of return metrics, speaking of that, because investors are just generally concerned about that, like are your kind of benchmarks or, you know, what are you shooting for when you're putting out a deal?
Sure. We always want to be able to give our investors an 8% preferred return.
Yeah.
And again, that's what I was just talking about, Suja, where we got to come in. It's got to be a property. We've got to be able to pay a price and get in where it cash flows right away because we want to pay our investors in year one. Even though we're doing a value add, we still want there to be enough cash flow to pay them an 8% return. So that's the real sticking point for us when I'm underwriting. It's okay, if I pay this and we get this property and we do this, can we give our investors an 8% return? Like, for sure. And nothing's guaranteed, obviously.
Yeah.
But we want to feel very confident that, hey, you know, even if things don't go perfectly, we're still going to be able to give the investors an 8% return. We might not get anything in that year one or year two, and that's kind of how it goes, but we want the investors to get 8%. So we do an 8% preferred return. So far, we've split the deal, the equity 50-50. And what we're looking for there is if we were to sell the property in 5 years, our investors are looking at least 16, hopefully closer to an 18% annualized return.
Yeah.
So if we sell, they get a big chunk. And if they look at what they've gotten, you know, over the 5 years, it's like, wow, we made an 18% return each year for 5 years. Those are kind of the metrics. There's IRR. Yeah, you know, at least 15. It doesn't mean as much to people. It's easier to think like, what's kind of, a lot of people just look at the eight and they're like, okay, that's kind of like my for sure, you know, not guaranteed, but most likely I'm going to get at least 8%. Okay. And then if we sell, cool, I'll get a big chunk and I'll look back and I've made 16, 17, 18%. Annualized.
Yeah, which is, I mean, very comparable to what you'll see most of the returns in any sort of hot market to be, right? So.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Plus you're maybe collecting more cash flow during the life of the deal.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, awesome stuff, Lee. You know, I know you have a great passion for helping people get started in this business. Is there any sort of parting words that you want to leave with people who are interested in purchasing their first apartment building?
Sure, Suja. I mean, I think, you know, if you're listening to this podcast, I mean, I think it's a great start because you've got to educate yourself. And I would say the next step is just get closer to people that can help educate you and partner with you. So, you know, I joined my local RIA and they had an apartment focus group. If I hadn't done that, I would not have been ready to jump into, you know, a 16 unit and then eventually, you know, to 45 and 96. So I wish I would have done that even earlier. I don't know if my path would have been that much different, but the sooner you get out there and network, you know, some of these coaching programs are getting pretty expensive. So I would try, you know, the local meetups and the local RIAs and things like that first, but you might feel like you need to invest in yourself and go join those. I mean, they often provide some good coaching, and then there's a good community of people that also are investing in themselves. So I know a lot of people that do those and have a lot of success, but I would say the networking is really key to do for sure.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, there's a lot of different ways to build a network and there's a lot of different ways to invest in yourself, and you got to be choosy with how you spend those dollars up front. I mean, you know, you just have to be careful. I wouldn't just necessarily jump into the first opportunity that you have, but the local RIAs are obviously a great way to kind of get in proximity with people who are doing this without necessarily, you know, having to make a big investment. So
yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
Yep.
Well, that's great. You know, proximity. I think there's some quote like proximity is power or something like that. But yeah, it's basically networking. If you guys have been listening to the show for a while, you know that, you know, the five people who you surround yourself with, that is the average of who you are. And if you want to get into real estate investing, then surrounding yourself with people who are doing it is just one of the most important things you could do. So Lee, thank you so much for coming on the show and sharing your story. Really enjoyed hearing about, you know, some of the details about how you did your first few deals and what you're working on now and investing in Dayton. Just a ton of great stuff.
Absolutely, Susan. Thank you for having me on.
You're welcome. Well, thank you so much. We'll see you next time.
Thank you so much for listening to Passive Income Unlocked. Before you go on to continue with your amazing day, please take a moment to reflect on what you truly desire in life. Then think about one thing you can do to push the ball forward in that direction. Also, please head over to iTunes, Spotify, or wherever you listen to podcasts and leave an honest rating and review of this show. It really would mean so much to me. Passive Income Unlocked is brought to you by Lux Capital. Lux works with investors nationwide to invest in real estate. We are closing the investing gap one investor at a time. Connect online at www.lux-cap.com, LUXE-CAP.com, for tons of free educational content to further your success.